Good morning. You're listening to The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. In honor of the holiday season, we're talking about how to survive the holidays if you're struggling with grief. Here to discuss this subject with us is Jessica Golden, Executive Director of Hospice of Homer. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
Carol D., Hospice of Homer Administrative Assistant and Coordinator of the Bereavement Program. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you for having me here.
And Vivian Finlay, a licensed marriage and family therapist and hospice volunteer. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We'd also like to hear from you. Do you have a question about how to handle grief this holiday season? Do you have a comment or experience that you would like to share? Please give us a call at 907-235-7721 or at info@kbbi.org. In this hour, we're going to talk a lot about how to handle loss of a loved one, but there's a lot of different types of grief that can make the holidays hard. Does one of you want to start by just chatting about, you know, what are the different types of grief that can kind of come up during the holidays?
Well, there's illnesses, new diagnoses of serious issues like cancers. There's, of course, death. There's dying, and parents often live outside Alaska, or siblings or friends and other family members. So that's hard when they're not here. When they are here, it's hard also, of course, because there's a balancing that needs to go on between taking care of them and getting on with whatever is expected during the holidays. And then there's the other kinds of losses, retirement and ill health of oneself and, you know, children aging, leaving home,
divorce,
et cetera.
Yeah.
It's a lot of different things that mm-hmm. we can see. And let's talk about why the holidays might, you know, make this so difficult. I mean, they're supposed to be the most, you know, wonderful time of the year, but it seems they can really amplify feelings of loss, of grief, of loneliness, like you said, of family changes. Do you want to talk about why the holidays can feel so hard?
Sure, I'll take that, and then I'll lob it over to our co-guests here. So first of all, let's just remember it's the darkest time of the year. It's the coldest time of the year. It's usually the iciest time of the year. And that can be hard enough to cope with on its own. Adding grief to a season when everyone else is so happy and so joyous, it can feel very much like you are alone in your grief. And adding to that the darkness and the cold, there can be a deep, intense feeling of isolation, which, of course, we know makes grief even worse.
No, I certainly would agree with that, and which is one of the reasons why people in the Northern Hemisphere have chosen this is a time of putting up lights and lighting candles and using bright colors and so on. These are things which help us to deal with the darkness. And that's one of the things that I think can be helpful for us to focus on when we're dealing with this time of year. The more lights you put up around your house or in your house, the more you lift yourself out of this time of darkness and salute the darkness, because it is something we also need in our lives and is a natural part of our lives.
And then there's the expectations that we have for ourselves and others seem to have for us during this time of year. So there's more social events and there's more gift giving, and even if you're giving to the food bank, there's extra expectations that we have on ourselves, and that's very hard to do if you're already suffering from loss and grief and trying to cope with that added stress.
The holidays also bring up memories. Mm-hmm. So if you have lost a loved one and you have those memories of the holidays, or you have traditions that they're no longer there to share with you, it's a painful reminder of what is not with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot there to talk about, but let's start by talking, you know, about, you know, memories that come up of loss. You know, how during this time can you honor, you know, people you've lost? How can you create rituals that really keep people who you've lost present during these holidays? Vivian, do you want to start with that?
Sure.
One?
Sure. Some people will, for example, go shopping for their loved one first. Of course, they give the gift to someone else, but they are thinking of their loved one when they buy the gift. That's a kind of a ritual that they can do every year, buy a gift for, like my late husband who died, and buy one for someone else. Pick one from a giving tree that matches that. You can have a candle, which is just in honor of your loved one. That's another lovely thing that also brings up the light issue. You can have participate in a ceremony like the one that hospice just did for the lighting of the candles and recognize the loved one that has died or is dying or anything like that. You can do the other hospice ceremony, which is to get a star on the tree.
Right.
Yeah, so we have a program called Light Up a Life, and you can purchase a star or multiple stars for your loved one, and they are on display at First National Bank Alaska. We partner with them to do this fundraiser. And if you would like to purchase a star, you can give us a call at 235-6899.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the star, just, and you can also, I would like to extend the invitation to come in and decorate the star if you want to, or take the star home and decorate it for yourself to take it. And doing something practical and real, and especially if there are children in the home, but even just for yourself sometime, is something that you can do that can help you move through that moment and realize, you know, you are putting into the community a symbol or a sign of your own love and your loss. And it's not just your loss, it's your love for that person that you're also putting forward, and that's what's important as we're grieving.
And I'd like to point out that we have people who purchase stars in memory of their lost pets. I mean, grief is not just about the human friends in our life, it's also about the animals that we love. And one of the things that we say in hospice and grief work is that one loss is every loss. So when you experience one loss, no matter how minor or how it may seem to other people, you're really bringing up all of the losses that you've experienced in your life. They're all connected.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. One of the things that I, with the Light of the Life program that I have been most impressed with in recent years, is one of our local employers actually bought stars for the employees whom he or she was aware of might be grieving, and allowed them to, you know, put the names of their loved ones on. And I thought that was a wonderful way of also the community recognizing the importance of the love, and also the respect and the remembrance of the people who are no longer in our lives that we love.
Plus, we support hospice in the process, which is really a good thing, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then it's really important for people to feel comfortable being able to talk to someone. And sometimes there isn't anybody that they can talk to in the family who's also might be grieving. So a hospice officer grief support group, a bereavement support group that mm-hmm. Carol does every week. And then there's, of course, the counselors that are available in the community and at the center and so on. So.
That grief support group is on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. at Hospice of Homer.
Mm-hmm. And we call it a walk-in group, so you don't need to call or make an appointment. You can, and we also, I mean, we are there when we are there, and if you walk in off the street because, oh, it's a bad day, I really need to talk to somebody about, I just need a place to sit down and talk. We're there for that. You know, we can
Absolutely.
Usually find a corner we can sit down in for a half an hour or longer if we need to, and just listen. We're good listeners. That's basically what we do.
So there are these wonderful resources available. I also want to ask about, you know, how people who are grieving can communicate with people in their life about their grief. You know, I imagine it might be easy to sort of gloss over it or to say it's not that bad. How, if we're grieving this holiday season, how should we talk to people in our lives about what we need and about our grief?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I would like to put forth the idea. This is something that I've learned since coming on at hospice. I've only been there for about a year and a half, and so I'm still learning a lot about about grief and how this works. And one of the things I've learned is that it's never a good idea to put the impetus for seeking help on the person who is grieving. If you have someone in your life who has lost someone in the last year, or the last 2 years, or the last 5 years, and you know that this might be a difficult time for them, reach out to them. Hold space for them. Acknowledge their grief. One of the things that we do in our society is we are afraid to talk about death. And it's, you know, it's a scary topic. It's a big topic. It's a sad topic. And so if somebody has experienced grief, we're afraid to go up to them and say, how are you doing without Joe this year? But they need some people to ask them, how are you doing without Joe this year? And they need to hear his name. They mm-hmm. need to know that other people are remembering him or right. remembering that lost person. So I would really shift that question towards the love, the people who love that person who is grieving, and say, reach out to them, hold space for them. Do not ask them to do things for you. Like, don't say, what can I do to help you? That's inviting them to come up with a task list for you. Instead, say, I'm going to come by with cookies and we can sit and let's look through the photos and talk about Joe. And if they don't want that, they'll say, that's not what I need right now. And trust them to know where they're at in their grief process.
Mm-hmm. And Jessica, what do you say to people who have some anxiety, who say, oh, you know, I know my friend is going through grief right now, but I'm really afraid of saying the wrong thing or coming off wrong. I really want to support them, but, I really don't know how.
I would suggest, first of all, if you're really, truly afraid of saying the wrong thing, look up some resources. Google. Mm-hmm. There's a terrific resource. It's called Option B, and it's by Sheryl Sandberg. And it's a whole toolbox of resources for dealing with loss, just not just of death, not just a physical loss, but all kinds of losses, loss of relationship, loss of, you know, maybe being isolated from your family. And it gives resources for how to support those in your life who are suffering grief. So look for resources if you're really afraid you're going to put your foot in your mouth. But the advice that I would give is just to walk into the situation willing to hold space. And what that means is to approach them with unconditional love and acceptance and let them speak or not speak as they need. And it's okay to sit in that space with someone who is grieving and not speak, or, you know, to do whatever they need, and they will let you know what their needs are.
Listening, that's the main thing.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it's just, we just listen. And when, let's say I'm grieving, what do I need? You ask, well, how do you tell people what you need? I totally agree with Jessica, but I need to say, I want to go to the group, or I want to just be heard, mm-hmm. or... It's very hard for a grieving person to do that, but it'd be very nice if they could just say, look, I can't do this. I don't have the energy. I can't decorate the tree. I can't buy the presents. I can't do this. I can't do that. And that's all right. That's all right.
Yeah. Like you said, there's a lot of expectations mm-hmm. sometimes this holiday season, and maybe you're the one who does a lot of, you know, the cooking or the decorating, and it sounds like you're saying, you know, to draw those boundaries of, you know, maybe this year, you know, not doing those things or being okay with letting somebody else do
that. It's just to know that you have the choice. You don't have to maintain all these traditions and customs that you're used to doing. We, for some reason, think we do need to maintain everything, but we don't.
Right. When you're talking about, you know, what to say to someone when you don't know what the words are, what often, the only thing that comes to me sometimes is simply, I don't know what to say. And it's okay to say that. I don't know what to say, because what people are not hearing your words, they're hearing the emotion that's coming and the caring that's coming from you. And we should keep that in mind. You don't have to have some wonderful phrase or some poetic something or other that encourages them. You can just say, I don't know what to say. And that's, and often the response that I have had to that is, you're right, there are no words. There are no words, you sometimes, for what people are feeling. And I want to encourage people also to not be afraid, if you are grieving, of what you're feeling, because it's very normal, very natural. It's simply a reminder and of the love that you had for that person and the space that that person had in your life, and you're still dealing with the fact that they're not there right at this moment for you to fill that space. So it's okay to feel what you're feeling. It's fine. It's the way it should be.
And everybody experiences it. It is a universal, every human being Absolutely. Experiences loss and grief at some point in their life.
Well, and at many points in their lives. Yes. Most of us at many points. Yeah.
And, you know, even though we will all deal with grief at some point, you know, it really doesn't mean that we know how to deal with it when it comes up. I mean, what are some of the ways in which, you know, we feel like it comes up and then we have to deal with it, or we should deal with it in some ways? I mean, what are some kind of misconceptions that you see in people who are experiencing grief and then, you know, may have some well-intentioned ways that they think they have to deal with it that might end up, you know, maybe being problematic in the long run?
Well, one of the things that we talked about this weekend at the workshop, the meet and greet that we held with Dr. Wired of Golden Willow Retreat, was the idea of grief being stages. This is, and I'll let Dr. Finley talk a little bit more about this because she's more knowledgeable about it than I am, but one of the things that we discussed is that it's not a progression. When you're grieving, it's not like you experience stage one, okay, that one's over, now stage two. He kept calling it a soup. And, you know, it's something that you may be angry one moment and accepting the next. You may be, you know, you may experience all of those, now they call them phases. You may experience all of those in one day and move back and forth through them. And that's part of the process, and that's part of the journey of beginning to heal, is recognizing that that's not, you're not going to, it's not a clean step-by-step process.
Right. It is helpful for people to be aware that they do share common feelings in the grief process. So whether it's called stages or phases or aspects or tasks that people have to get through, you know, we know that initially people feel a great deal of shock and denial, like this can't be happening, and disbelief. And we know they go through that, and it lasts quite a while, weeks sometimes. And their whole body is as if they've been through a physical shock. And it's a very traumatic feeling, like going through an earthquake, you know? It's that kind of feeling. You get really anxious and you can't sleep and so on and so forth. But then there's a period of protest. And it's like, no, this can't be. And I'm not going to accept that this is happening. And we're going to fight this, and protest and anger and bargaining and all of this stuff. And then there's a period of coming slowly to terms with it. But in all of this, you've gone through depression and anger and sadness and lack of energy and hope and everything. You feel everything. Your body feels it. Your mind feels it. Your friends know about it. Your family knows about it. It's just all encompassing. And like Carol said, anything you feel is part of grief.
And it certainly is. And I would just like to say that one of the things, sometimes some people have a gift for saying the right thing, that giving you a phrase that you can hang on to. And one that worked, that was really helpful to me, is that I could, after I'd lost a son and come back to who he died in another country, and I came back here after several months of being there, was going through a period of feeling just, I woke up in the morning tireder than when I went to bed. I was cranky and grumpy and disorganized and forgetting things and just generally not happy with my life and how I was conducting it. And so I went to the doctor, and this woman said to me, she said, "So what's going on with you?" And which doctors don't always say, it's a nice question to be asked sometimes when you go to see them with a vague kind of generic, oh, I feel crappy kind of situation. And I told her, and she said, "You know, every cell in your body is grieving." And that phrase has saved me so many times, because it's true. From the tips of your toes to the ends of your hair, your cells especially, and this is especially true when it involves the loss of a child, and especially with a mother, I think. So that was one phrase that really has come back to me always to remember. Every cell in my body is grieving. It's not just my mind going crazy. It's not just my heart feeling broken. My whole body is involved in this process, and I need to recognize that and expect it. So now, my son was killed on Mother's Day, and and it was an automobile accident, so a shocking and traumatic experience. So now I have come to realize that when a week or two before Mother's Day, I start feeling tired and listless and disorganized and disassociated with what's going on around me, the moment I realize, oh, Mother's Day's coming up, that's why I feel the way I feel, there's a burden lifted for me. So what I'm trying to get at, really, in a roundabout way, is being aware of what your own reactions are and how your grief has affected you physically and emotionally, so that when it comes back up, because it will do that, it's this tangled ball of emotions and things, it will go and come and sometimes blindside you when you least expect it. You're feeling great, you got up, you're out, you're doing your thing, and then you hear a song, or you smell a perfume, or you hear a word, and wham, you're right back in the bottom of the pit again. To understand and notice what happens to you, and be able to say to yourself, okay, I know I'm grieving right now. This is what is happening, and it's okay. I'm going to get through this. It's going to pass. And that is that's the best thing that I can offer.
Yeah, and Kara, I just want to thank you for sharing that, and so sorry for your loss. Can you talk about what it was like the first holiday season after your son had passed?
Well, the first holiday season that hit me he was killed in May in Italy, and I came back here in September to kind of pick up, you know, my own life here. And it was, everywhere I went, it was Halloween preparation. And I don't know of anyone else that I've talked to who has ever had this reaction. It was horrifying for me. It was just awful to go into the bank and find skeletons and spider webs and ghoulish masks and things like that, and tombstones. You know, it was so, so hard. And I really couldn't navigate it. I just was having a terrible time with it. I was one of those lucky people who had a friend who understood. And when she, one day I remember, and I would just, this was something that I like to point out. She called me. Yeah, she'd usually call me a couple times a week and say, and her, it would be, how's your day going? would be her question. And this particular day, she said, how's your day going? And I fell apart. I said, it's really awful. And I just fell apart. She lived in Palmer and I was in Anchorage. 45 minutes later, she was at my door, you know, and she said, we're going for a walk. And we walked for 2 or 3 hours along the coastal trail in Anchorage. And I was able to tell her how this Halloween thing was really getting to me. And just being able to say it out loud and to say your loved one's name and to have someone there who hears it is the most amazing source of relief and to help you move on beyond that. So, you know, as a friend of someone who is suffering grief, you know, just being there when you can see that maybe they need just someone to listen, you know, is very important. And that was the holiday that was hardest for me.
And I would like to point out that Carol's friend knew a secret that is really something that everyone should know. If you know someone who's going through loss or through grief, and this doesn't include, as Vivian pointed out when we started, it's not just the loss, like the actual physical loss or death. It could be a diagnosis. Maybe you know someone who's going through an illness, that sort of thing. The magic phrase is, how are you doing today? Or how are you doing right now? Because it changes constantly mm-hmm. when you're in a state of grief. So asking that person, you know, how are things going, is not nearly as effective as asking, how are you right now?
And are there other things that stand out to you from that story, or that kind of working through that grief work, that we should think about, you know, that might be helpful to other people?
I mean, grief work in general. I just think that Carol's got hit it, that you have to be aware of what's going on with you and give yourself permission to have whatever all those feelings are. Anger doesn't go over very well with other people, you know, when you're angry. And so any of the listeners who hear this, I think, to be aware that there are ways to channel your anger, and one of the good ways is to walk, you know. But another way is whatever helps you normally, you know, when you're not grieving, to get through anger or irritability or you know, ideally avoid drugs and alcohol, you know, but any other way is...
Cleaning house works for me. I clean like a madwoman when I'm furious. And that's a good thing, you know, it's a good thing.
As a friend, if you know somebody, you usually know how they handle those kinds of things. How do they handle anger or irritability or depression, you know? And then you can advise them accordingly. Well, you usually love to go swimming when you're depressed. Let's do that, you know. Or you like to go shopping. It's not one of my things, but, you know, people do love to go shopping. So great, let's go shopping, you know.
Well, that kind of thing. And I think it's important to recognize that we as a culture we're so individualistic that we encourage people not to seek help. There's this idea of, and I've done this myself with my own losses, I'm okay, I'm fine, I've got this together, I can't let this slow me down or prevent me from just continuing on, and that's not a healthy, I found that was not a healthy way for me to deal with loss, and in particular, men are taught, don't cry, don't reach out, don't seek help. So, I mean, it's really, if you have a man in your life who has experienced a loss, please, please, please reach out to him, your friend, your father, your brother. Men are trained just to stuff it all down inside and not share. So please ask them, please, you know, the biggest thing, Vivian said, don't turn to drugs and alcohol. People do that when they're isolated. People do that when they need a connection and they don't have it. So be that connection, even if it may not even be someone you know all that well. They may be waiting for that one person to reach out and say, how are you doing today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing, I just would like to bring this up, that in Italy, when there is a natural disaster kind of event, the first thing which the government organizes to send into the disaster area is coffee and chocolate and wine. And those, they're called comfort products. And that's what they are a part of the disaster relief program of the country. And so I also want to, you know, so I was thinking, well, okay, Christmas, this holiday season can really be a time for us to let ourselves indulge ourselves in those things like chocolate, great, good for mood boosting, you know, the cookies, the things which you always say we must do without. No, you don't do without anything. You know, you just keep it in moderation, don't make yourself sick. But those things are important, and they comfort us for a reason. Mother Nature has taught us that those things are important to help our bodies and our souls heal. And so let yourself go and eat all the fudge you want, you know. Okay, so that's one of the advantages, let's say, of this particular season.
And then we don't want to, if people have a spiritual background, make a connection, you know. Yeah. Reach out to your spiritual community, your faith community also, because that's another resource. Any resource that you've ever heard about or used, that from friends to faith to exercise to food and food wine, you know, any resource that has helped you, use those resources, you know. But like you say, in moderation if it can hurt you, you know.
And, you know, all of this advice, I kind of feel sometimes it's like it's a double-edged sword. It's great advice, but you're also looking at somebody who's, you know, down low at the worst point in their life and saying, do this. And that, I mean, that's very easy for somebody who feels healthy and hale to look at somebody who's grieving or suffering and say, you need to go for a walk. But if they can't get up off the floor and go for a walk, sit on the bathroom floor with them and cry with them, hold them.
Right.
Talk to them. If they can't do that, meet them where they're at.
That's a very good point. And also, my point really was, you know, now is the time to take the fudge to your friend. You know, I mean, I'm talking metaphorically, obviously, but, you know, and sometimes that is what is needed. You know, you show up at the door with a, you know, a plate full of, I don't know, baklava. And that's, you don't have to say anything else necessarily. If the person invites you in and says, let's have this with a cup of coffee and stick around a while, that's great. And if they say, thank you very much, and close the door, that's okay too, you know. But those gestures are exceedingly important when you're grieving. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about holidays and grief, and if you have a question about how to handle grief this holiday season, or if you have a comment or experience you'd like to share, please do give us a call at 907-235-7721 or email us at info@kbbi.org. So let's talk about guilt. Do you see that manifest for people who are grieving during this season? You know, perhaps people who feel guilt for not being sad enough or for feeling too sad when they feel like they're supposed to be happy and enjoying the holidays. Is that something you see? And what do you say to those people who might feel like they're not handling this right? You know, that this is not how it should be.
There is no right way to grieve, and that is really important to convey. So we do say that. So if you feel guilty, let's hear what you're feeling guilty about. People feel guilty for not being there enough for a friend, or for not helping enough, or if you're a mom who's just lost her baby in a miscarriage, for example, or I did something wrong, or I didn't do enough of this, so it's all, quote, normal. But it doesn't mean that they don't feel terrible, and it does mean that we have to validate how they're feeling and that you will get through this, and we do not ever buy into that. We never say, oh, yes, you're right. You should have done this, and you should have done that. There's no shoulds. Okay, so that's my overall umbrella, is that we have to accept however they're feeling and how awful it feels for them. We have to hear how awful it feels for them.
Mm-hmm. So when someone is grieving, it feels like you're walking around with a rain cloud over you, like Eeyore, right, from Winnie the Pooh, and you're walking around with this rain cloud, and taking that rain cloud into a Christmas party or into the office every day when people are jingle belling, and, you know, it can make you feel like you're the Debbie Downer of the group and make you feel like your grief does not have a place, and which can lead to feelings of guilt, like, oh, I'm making everybody miserable. But you're entitled to that. You're entitled to that rain cloud. That's your rain cloud. And it, as long as it needs to be there, you're entitled to it. So I would encourage people to just remember that their grief, your grief is not a burden for the people you are around. Your grief is not a burden for those who love you. It is something that you're experiencing that will grow smaller with time.
And not a reason to isolate yourself,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, exactly.
You know, we do have a caller.
Thank you for a comment for the coffee table.
Yes. Hi, Catherine. You're on the coffee table.
Awesome. Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you all for coming on the radio this morning. What you have to share is really, really special. And I kind of stumbled upon the grief support group several years ago when my mom was really ill and I knew she was dying. And I discovered there's something called anticipatory grief. Yep. And I found wonderful support at hospice, and the group was phenomenal, and it was a good thing for me. And I just wanted to thank you for everything that you do for the community.
Oh, thank you, Kathy. Thank you so much. And you too.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much for your call.
So as Kathy mentioned, anticipatory grief is grief that occurs when you know that an event is going to happen. So for example, that somebody is going to pass. And it was a surprise to me to learn that people can grieve for someone before they've passed, and also that somebody who is currently in the act of passing can grieve their own death. So those are other types of grief as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then if you have, for example, you're developing, you've got a cancer that's metastasized, and you know that. That's, you're anticipating things getting worse in every way, or dementia, for example. Mm-hmm. The loss of your abilities and the loss of the people around you being able to expect what they have always expected from you, and so on. It's mushrooms, you know? It's lots of layers to this. Lots of mushrooms.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to a phrase that Vivian used, which was getting through, because for me it's very important to keep in our minds that this big ball of darkness and grief and pain that we have in front of us is not something we can go around. We can't go around it to the left or the right or under it or over it. The only way we're going to get healing is to walk right through it. And we have to do that. We hate it because it hurts so darn much. But that is something that we must do. And we can do it if we understand that we will get through it. We will survive it. And one of the ways to think, one of the things that helped me, I should say, and that we have worked with some in hospice, is to at some point in our lives, and not necessarily at the moment when we are deep in grief, but to kind of take an inventory of all of the little and big losses that we have survived in our lives. And Ted Wired, of course, his big news for me when he came here the first time was the very first loss we suffer is leaving our mother's womb. You know, and that is a big loss. You know, we're out of that comfortable, cozy, wonderful place, and sometimes with great difficulty entering into a totally different world. And that's what happens when you lose someone. Your relationship to the world around you and the people around you and your own self and your own self-concept has completely altered, because that person is no longer in the picture. And so you have to, part of your grieving is that you need to rethink everything about your own values and what is important and what is the next step you're going to take and who you are in the world. And this is especially important for people who have been long-term caregivers, taking care of relatives or siblings or whatever for long periods of time often, and they are grieving all the way through that process because of the loss of that person as they knew them. But when that person actually passes, they again have to evaluate, who am I now? I'm not a caregiver any longer, because that identified me for the last 5 years, 10 years. Now I'm not a caregiver. Who am I? And those are all processes you need. It's helpful. I would say you have to, or you need to. It's helpful to be aware that you're going to go to that place of, who am I now, you know, and what's important to me now as I go ahead in my life. So that's helpful too.
Just to go back to the very basic that Carol alluded to there, is that grief is really about the process that we go through when we're separated from a person or a place or a thing, or that we have a connection to which we have a connection, to whom we have a connection. So that connection is severed either by sickness or by death or by moving or by fire or whatever, you know, and you have to do something with that loss of the connection that you had, that break, and that is reinventing. Well, now what am I, and who am I, and where am I? And, you know, it can be very minor, like I've lost my watch yesterday, you know, very minor. But it's like, oh, well, now what do I do? Well, think about that in terms of the loss of a loved one. Well, now what do I do? That becomes much more serious, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't just go out and buy another one, you know.
Right, and reconsidering almost, yeah, who you are, as, you know, you've said.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is helpful to look at the grief process as a process of redefining oneself, and I just wanted to point out that culturally across many, many cultures, the concept of death and the associations with death are not with an end but with a rebirth, mm-hmm. and that's something we don't feel as intensely in the winter time when it's dark and everybody's celebrating the holidays, though we associate that more with spring. But if it's helpful to you at the point in the process that you're in right now to think of your grief process as a transformation into a new you, a you who knows how to be healthy and to be yourself without that person in your life, with that person gone, and still honoring that person, still loving that person, still showing your love for that person in your daily actions, it can be a helpful way for people to sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel in their grief process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in talking about rebirth, I also want to talk about new traditions possibly during the holidays. We talked about the holidays may not look the same for a lot of reasons. I'm wondering if you all can talk about, you know, or give advice to, you know, either keeping old traditions or making new ones, and sort of how to go about that and how to sort of approach that thinking of how to make the holidays different but meaningful to you.
Not specific to the holidays, but I think if you're grieving, it might be helpful to sit down and make a list of what we call in grief work grief anniversaries. These are days that might be the anniversary of your loved one's death. They might be a wedding anniversary. It might be their birthday. It might be the day you first met that person. So sitting down and making a list of those dates that might be difficult for you, so that you know ahead of time, coming up, oh, you know, I went on my first date with my spouse who I lost to the Christmas ball or whatever, and now that association, that memory is now associated with this joyous holiday. And what tools can you come up with to help you celebrate the joy, or even get through, if that's what you need to do to get through it? One of the things that I do every holiday now, in memory of my brother, is I make his favorite side dish and I serve it at every holiday just in honor of him. I've heard of some families who mm-hmm. put a plate at their table for their lost loved one, mm-hmm. or who light a candle for their lost loved one. Sort of whatever makes sense to you is I think what, you know, you know that person best, and the way that your heart feels to honor them is going to be the way that's going to help you heal and get through.
And it's important, I think, to also understand that the grief you're feeling is your way of honoring and continuing to love the person you have lost. And when you somehow are able to arrive in your consciousness at that realization, you've made a huge step ahead in being able to deal with your feelings.
On the other hand, and that brings up, people feel guilty when they're not so sad about mm-hmm. a loved one having passed on, and they say, "Well, I should be sad, you know." But it doesn't mean that you never feel happy. That's okay to feel happy. It just means that you're working through this whole process, mm-hmm. and you'll have more periods of joy and less periods of sadness. But there will still be times when you're feeling very, very sad, and that's okay too.
One of the feelings that we most often hear at hospice associated with guilt is, especially if there's been a very long illness and it is a very fresh grief, is relief. Mm-hmm. For somebody who's been caregiving for somebody for maybe years, sometimes when, and they've known that their loved one is going to pass, when their loved one passes, often it comes with a sense of relief. And that can make people feel incredibly guilty, but it is okay to feel that, because that is a very normal thing to feel.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Going back to this sort of theme of today, of it's, yes, Carol, I think, mentioned to me earlier, of it's okay to not be okay, or it's okay, yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's okay to not be okay. Let yourself feel that, and indulge yourself in it if you need to. You know, it's okay.
Hospice has a bunch of wonderful books and, mm-hmm, like these handouts that are based on what we've talked about, and handouts that we use for the hospice training. And it's just a great place for resources. And I think sometimes some people don't like to read books or handouts or anything, but some people wouldn't mind just popping into a group, and Carol can say, well, this is a good resource, you know. So there's lots of different ways of getting the resources.
Right.
And you don't have to be the person who's experiencing it to come in and borrow a book on grief. If you have a loved one who is experiencing grief, come in and get a book, because you may be in a better state to take in that information than they are in their grief process. Dr. Wired, who we keep mentioning because he was here this weekend, he has a book that he said, I don't even know how thick it is, maybe 100 pages. He said it's a 40-minute read that takes 2 years. So if you yourself are in a place where you can't, you know, process information or take in that information, but maybe you have a friend or a loved one who wants to help, we have resources available that we are able to provide.
Yeah, talking about resources that we have at hospice, I'd like to mention that we do have a bereavement correspondence program, which is available to all of the community, not only to our clients, people who are direct with whom we have direct relationship, for various reasons. And the correspondence program, to become a part of it, to try it out, all you have to do is give us an address to mail it to. And it is basically a letter, a monthly letter, with a handout or two. Might be poetry, might be a little bit of, you know, humor. It might be something, you know, that will come to you in an envelope directed at you, for you to, you know, look, okay, today I don't feel like this, I can't look at this today. You can put it aside, you can toss it in the trash bin, I'll never know, and don't make me feel bad. But you can also have it there if you, you know, if you want to go back to it and read it over and over. I've had people who came to the group who sat and were in the correspondence program who said, I just keep a folder on my kitchen table, I look at them, I put them in there, and sometimes I just go back through. And it's something to remind you also that someone else is thinking of you and of your situation at least once a month, you know. And so that's one of the resources which we have, and everyone is welcome to it. And Vivian has mentioned the library and the Tuesday group. We also have, and this is one of the things which I grieve, is that in our society we no longer wear outward signs of our grief. And in other societies, you know, someone dies in a household, a big black wreath or big black bow goes on the front door. So everyone who walks by that house, whether they know that family or not, knows that something has happened of importance in that home. And people still wear a mourning band or some kind, or a button or something, which signals to people that I'm in a special state. This is a special, particular time for me. And I mourn the fact that we don't do that anymore. And so, but we do have at hospice some wonderful little pins that if you are a person who would like to be able to some days put a pin on your jacket that says, you know, be aware, today I'm particularly sensitive, or I am grieving someone that I love. We have some of those available, and you're very welcome to come in and have one.
And if you see someone wearing one, that's what that means.
Yeah.
Just be aware of that.
Yeah, aware that if you see someone wearing that, and that can sometimes be an opener, an opportunity to say, you know, I see, you know, I see and I'm here, you know, that's being present is very important. So let's see, I think we've covered pretty much that. Oh, you can call up and we just have a chat on the phone sometimes, or just walk in the door any time of the day. And if we need to, we find a corner to sit down in and let you talk about what is going on with you.
At Hospice of Homer, the priority is the person who's standing in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we literally do have people. So if you're sitting there and you're thinking, well, I need someone to talk to, but I could never just walk in and talk to these strangers, we literally have it happen all the time. Yeah. So you would not be the first. Mm-hmm. And we would, you know, put a cup of coffee in your hands and find you a cozy seat and let you talk. So,
yeah.
Well, I think that's a great note to end on, the great resources that Hospice of Homer has. I want to thank each of my guests for coming on the show. Jessica Golden, Executive Director of Hospice of Homer, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Carol D., Hospice of Homer Administrative Assistant and Coordinator of the Bereavement Program, thank you.
Thank you.
And Vivian Finlay, Marriage and Family Therapist, thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to our listening audience for tuning in. This has been The Coffee Table.